to you by the Electoral Commission. Good morning and welcome to our AM meeting on air on 104.6 Planet FM. My name is Anna, I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Please welcome our speakers today, Neil, Jennifer and Mark, who will be sharing their experience, strength and hope with you all. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who will share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may share their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, political organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So our first speaker we have with us is Neil. Would you like to go ahead and share with us, Neil?
Sure. Hi, I'm Neil and I'm an alcoholic. I've just returned back to New Zealand about a year ago. I feel very fortunate. I feel incredibly grateful, actually. My drinking, like so many others, but my drinking progressed slowly. And I had a lot of fun. I was always out. I was always going somewhere, doing something fun, visiting a new place, having a drink here, having a drink there. And yeah, it was a ton of fun. I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't fun. I did it because it brought me some sort of relief, some sort of joy, some sort of just great experience for a while. And I don't know when it was that changed. But at some point, it just got worse, and it went from let's go check out a new town or area or a suburb in the city that I was in overseas to the destination being the pub in that suburb. And all I could think about was, oh yeah, let's just walk around for a bit, and then it's 11:30. Oh, okay. It's 11:45. Oh, okay. Now it's almost time. It's socially acceptable for me to convince the people I'm with to go get a drink. And then I would have one, and then I'd go off to the quote unquote bathroom and sneak off to have another one, you know, have another pint. No one else would know. And then that was actually okay for a while. That worked. I got my little kick and I got to do something naughty and no one knew about, and then it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And eventually it destroyed my life. I describe it as wrapping barbed wire around a bulldozer and then driving it through my life. I lost everything. My wife, my job, my respect, my friends. I lost everything. And then the first time I got fired, I remember I was driving exactly the point. I was like, I need some help. And I went into some sort of dayhab concept and, you know, kind of I started getting sober and I had, I don't know, maybe 6 months. But I never embraced the program. I never really committed to it. And then lo and behold, I ended up back, not only back where I was before, but I found that the next rock bottom I had was worse than the last. I've heard a saying while I've been in the program that rock bottom has a basement, and if you scratch at it, it'll take you through to the next rock bottom. And so I continued to do that for a couple of years, in and out of the program, kind of, you know, not really committing to anything, just saying that I was an alcoholic, but not really doing anything. And my sponsor at the moment says a wonderful thing. You know, he said, it's a program of action, and it's a simple program for complex folk. Eventually, when I returned to New Zealand, I thought, okay, my latest rock bottom was exponentially worse than the one before. Maybe it's time I give it a go. Maybe I try and actually do the simple things that I had to do. And my life has changed so much. I am so, so incredibly grateful. A year ago, I was in the darkest, most despicable place you could ever imagine. And I never thought I would ever get anywhere like close to that existence that I lived. But by just doing the simple things, going to meetings, getting a sponsor, reading the big book, calling my newcomers, writing a gratitude list, you know, working the program with my sponsor, my life has changed. Like, not a little bit. I feel fortunate. The words in the big book say that if you know, follow the program, you will have a life beyond your wildest dreams. That has literally become true for me, and it became true for me within months of doing just these simple things. And I did the math. I could spend, in a week, if I calculate that I'd spend 2 hours of each day, minimum 2 hours of each day, either trying to get a drink, being hungover from having too much drinks, or dealing with the consequences of drinking. If you sum that up, that'll come to whatever, 15, 16 hours a week, like give or take. These days, all I have to do is spend about an hour a day on average, which is doing a few simple things that my sponsor tells me to do, and then going to meetings, at least 5 a week. I get to have a life beyond my wildest dreams. So that's such a simple, like, the maths is so simple. Like, I can either commit my time and effort to doing this damaging thing that's destroying my life, or I can spend actually less time and have infinite upside. What drinking became for me was, again, a simple maths. It got to a point where a drink had unlimited downside. And I proved that to myself time and time again. I could go lower and lower and lower into new rock bottoms. Unlimited downside and zero upside. That's a powerful equation, right? Like, that one drink, the one thing that I really want, has only one directional risk or reward. It's just unlimited downside. There's no upside for me anymore. And so all it took in the end for me was to do the simple things in the program, which is turn up to a meeting, find a sponsor, and do what he tells me to do. And that's it. And yeah, I'm so grateful. Today I'm a grateful, grateful recovering alcoholic. And just for today, I'm so glad to be alive. Without this program, I know I would have nothing. And so it's a genuine privilege to be here, and yeah, to be at this meeting with these wonderful folk who turns out are just like me. That's me. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Neil. Our next speaker this morning is Jennifer. Please share with us, Jennifer.
Thanks so much, Anna. Hi, my name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. Let's cut that. Yeah. My name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is the 5th of January 2019. When I first came into recovery in May 2018, I heard two things in these early days. First of all, I didn't fit in. I was a square peg in a round hole. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. My dad was a policeman. But when we stopped moving around, I still didn't fit in. My dad was an alcoholic was the second thing I learnt. All the behaviours explained, and I realised that the memory I have when I was 11 years old of my dad heaving with blood, being rushed to hospital, mum screaming and staying there for 6 months, was a direct result of his alcoholism. That arterial hemorrhage, which nearly killed him, left him a dry drunk for the rest of his life. He never found AA. My regret today is that on his deathbed, I didn't ask him why. So while alcohol wasn't permitted in my home, but when I went away to university, that very first day I found alcohol. The third years took the first years down to the pub for a few beers. But for me, it was the beginning of a very long relationship with alcohol. I'm just going to quote a woman in recovery. Her name is Karen R. And she's the author of Crossing the River of Denial in the Big Book. And her story is so powerful. She is one of the most strongest influences of my recovery. I'm just going to steal her words. I got drunk, I blacked out, threw up, had dry heaves, was sick to death that day, but I knew I would do it all over again. For the first time, I felt part of a group without having to be perfect or get approval. She was 16, I was 17. Well, that went on for 3 full years of my university education. It's a miracle I actually graduated. My dad was called in for an intervention, per se, with the dean. But they didn't offer me a solution. I was 17 years old, and the adults gave me no guidance on how to get help or support. I was simply told to moderate my drinking and my behaviour at university. Well, I did just the opposite and went on for another 3 years. I did graduate, and I became a teacher. There were periods of my life when I drank responsibly or normally, but other times in my life, I found others who drank just like me, and the story continued. When I moved to London, I met the man that I'm still with today, and that was over 30 years ago. Paul is a normal drinker, so we engaged in normal drinking patterns of behaviour. A pint at a bar, a glass of wine, a couple, maybe a bottle of wine with dinner, but that was the extent. However, when I went off and we expatted together in the Middle East and in Singapore, the game changed. As Karen says, finally I made some friends who drank just as I did. Our drinking was disguised as fishing trips and chili cook-offs, but they were really excuses for week-long benders. Well, there were no fishing trips or chili cookouts. God, that's a mouthful. But there were tennis games, an excuse for drinks afterwards, dinner parties that went on, you know, all night, balls that we would go to. We'd be dressed up to the nines, beautiful gowns, the hair, the makeup, the jewellery. I'd go off into the night and come home 8 hours later like the cat dragged in. It was just a pattern and cycle of behaviour, and I loved it. On returning to New Zealand again, life looked like normalcy. I retrained, I'd been a teacher, and then I was an event manager. And I spent my days making sure that others acted responsibly and behaved well at events, with often over 1,000 people at these events that we were putting on. But ultimately, what was brewing was that I didn't know then was that when I put alcohol into my body, I'm powerless over how much and with whom I drink. All good intentions drowned in denial. So over the years, I've lost both my parents. I've given birth to a child and endured 15 rounds of IVF. We lost our home and all the hard-won advantages, of which there were many. I was unemployable, obese, and my mental health declined, leading to a diagnosis of clinical depression. It was the darkest period in my life. I was suicidal and felt that there was just no purpose to me being here in this world. A friend at this point encouraged me to walk with a goal of completing a half marathon. That woman saved my life and is someone to whom I'm forever grateful. But 2 years later, after a particularly dark time, again unable to find work, I found myself buying a bottle of vodka on a Monday lunchtime. This scene became, well, I don't talk about it a lot, but 18 months of pure hell for me and my family. It is a miracle I'm here today. One of the things that I'm least proud of is the daily drink driving. Trips across Auckland to pick up my child at an elite private school. It is an absolute miracle that I wasn't caught, but clearly God had other intentions for me. My husband took the reins of my recovery and took me to my GP, who suggested that I was an alcoholic. From there, I came into the rooms of AA. But I wasn't to stay sober. I was exited from rehab and later received a bipolar diagnosis after a manic episode in which I didn't sleep for 13 days. 6 months later, I completed that 2-month program despite all the odds and have been in recovery since that date of admission. Honestly, the last 6.5 years haven't been easy. I still have to face challenges at 55 years old around my employment and finding my purpose in life. And life is life. It's hard for many. Our child, Coda, has been undeniably affected by my alcoholism and our family's dysfunction. Our family's journey has been impossibly difficult, especially in the last 5 years. But today, as I said, we just celebrated 30 years of marriage. I ask Paul why he ever stayed with me, and he says that the woman that he met in London all those years ago is still there when he looks into my eyes. And today my living amends is just one day at a time. I'm happy to report that for my child, they are thriving at university in Wellington and living their best life. Happy to take a call and see their mum at any time. So I'm going to finish with a few words from Karen from the Big Book. She's now 33 years sober. And it goes, I found everything I had ever looked for in Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to thank God for putting AA in my life. Now I thank AA for putting God in my life. I found my tribe, the social architecture that fulfills my every need for camaraderie and conviviality. I learned how to live. When I asked how I could find my self-esteem, you told me by doing worthwhile acts. You explained the Big Book had no chapters titled Into Thinking or Into Feeling, only Into Action. I found plenty of opportunity for action in AA. I could be just as busy and helpful to others as I wanted to be as a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was never a joiner, but I got deeply involved in AA. Service because you told me to do so. I would never have to drink again. You said as long as I put AA first in my life, everything that I put second would be first class. This has proved to be true over and over again. So I continued to put AA and God first, and everything I have ever lost was returned many times over. The career that I lost had been restored with even greater success. The house that I lost has been replaced by a townhouse that is just the right size for me. So here I am, sober, successful, serene. Just a few of the gifts of the program for surrendering, suiting up and showing up for life every day. Good days and bad days. Reality is a wild ride and I wouldn't miss it for the world. I don't question how this program works. I trust in God, stay involved in AA service, go to lots of meetings, work with others and practice the principles of the steps to the best of my willingness each day. I don't know which of these things keep me sober, and I'm not about to find out. It's worked for me for quite a few days now, so I think I'll try it again tomorrow. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Jennifer. And our last speaker today is Mark. Would you like to share with us, Mark?
Yes, thank you. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Saying I'm an alcoholic, it's always come easy for me, and I know in the rooms that isn't always the case with everyone. I hear people's stories about their struggles of acceptance of being an alcoholic. But I've always known that sort of alcohol and me had a very sort of symbiotic relationship. I grew up in a family of alcoholics. In fact, my very first memory is of waking up. I think I was about 3 years old, and going out into the lounge and just seeing the debris of a party there. There were, you know, glasses half full of whiskey with cigarette butts in them. There were, you know, other glasses with gin. And I remember sort of sniffing them and thinking, oh, you know, that's interesting. I don't really mind that. My first drinking started, I have a memory of being at school, and I was only 8 or 9 years old, and I'd snuck a little miniature bottle of whiskey and had that in my desk. And I don't know if any of you is old enough to remember, we used to make baskets with raffia, which was little hollow tubing, and I'd taken some of that. I'd had it up my arm, sort of into the desk, into this bottle, and I was sucking on that at, you know, 8 years old at school. So that's, you know, that's when I started. I drank for 4 decades. The first sort of third of that was, you know, what I thought was normalized drinking, and what that meant was I would go out with friends, with family, who were all, you know, all of this group were alcoholics. I see that now. And would drink very heavily, very steadily, you know, lots of, you know, it wasn't a case of going to the pub and having a pint. It was a case of going to the pub and having a jug and then having another jug and then having another jug of beer after that. And so I would look at the effect that they had on some of my family members and sort of think, ah, you know, I'm doing better than that. You know, it's not so bad for me, because, you know, they're comatose at the end of the night and I'm still awake and drinking. So, you know, yes, you know, I'm an alcoholic, but, you know, I'm managing that. Of course, you know, I see now that was not manageable. And that first few years was also a case of me drinking alcohol to mask all of the other unreasonable stuff that was going on in my life at the moment, because these people around me who were also drinking were angry and fighting, and that's behaviour that I also picked up in my alcoholic state. I you can't see me. I'm not the biggest of people, so I wasn't a great fighter. But what I would use is my words, and I was a nasty, snarky, angry person in my alcoholism, and that made me a very lonely person as well, because nobody wants to be friends with someone like that. So while I was out in those early years drinking with lots of people, it was also a very sort of lonely existence, because, you know, at the end of the night, nobody wanted to be around me. The next morning, of course, you know, I was full of regrets, sometimes remembering, sometimes not remembering what I'd said, but knowing that I hadn't been a very nice person. So that's, you know, that's the first third of my alcoholic state. I then sort of got into a position where I was, you know, I managed to, you know, keep good jobs while I was an alcoholic. I don't know, you know, God was watching over me and allowing that to happen somehow, so that I could have these experiences. And so the next third was a period of lots of travel, lots of drinking, as I would think of it, because it's part of my job, to go out and party and be the, as I would see it, the life of that party. I think if I saw myself, perhaps video on that now, I'd say it in a completely different light. But I thought that, somehow I needed alcohol to, keep up that sort of camaraderie, to be part of the sort of bon vivant, if you will, so that I could sort of, be what I needed to be in my work life. And, I got into, again, some very sorry states around that. The next third of my life is where, I realized actually I've got to cut back on drinking here, and I tried to do that. I tried very hard to do that on my own. And I would have periods of months, of weeks, not drinking, but I'd always sort of have these little binge attacks. And so while I tried very hard to do that on my own, I failed until I walked into an AA room about a year and a third ago, and that's where I found my true people, because I realized then that actually, this is a disease that I have. It's something that needs help. And these people in the AA rooms are people who can help me understand who I am, what I am, and how unmanageable alcohol has been for me. But actually, look, here's a program that works. And I see people who actually, my 4 decades of drinking, they've had 4 decades of sobriety. They've done that one day at a time, and I can do that, one day at a time. I can recover, because while alcoholism is a progressive disease, sobriety is progressive as well. And I'm enjoying, working with my sponsor, working through the steps, and just, one day at a time, being a much better person, and more to the point, being a better family man than I grew up with. And my daughter's not seeing me alcoholic. She's living in a space where she gets up in the morning and we go out for a walk in the park like we did this morning. And that's the difference that AA's making for me. So I'll just leave it there.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Mark. That is all the time we have today. So thank you again to Neil, Jennifer and Mark for joining us in the studio today, and to all of you for listening. We are on air each Sunday at 10:45 a.m. here on 104.6 Planet FM. If you or anyone you know is in need of help from AA, please either call on 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. That's 0800 229 6757, or visit the AA website www.aa.org.nz, where you can find a raft of information. And finally, you can find today's recording and others on the Planet FM website, www.planetaudio.org.nz, under the program name AA On Air. And finally, could you join me now in closing this meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
Auckland Council has a goal of zero waste to landfill by 2040. That means recycling, composting, reusing and repurposing materials. Here's another Zero Waste tip on Planet FM. Here's a tip on using your food scraps bin properly. Be sure to use Auckland Council's pink caddy liners or paper bags to collect food scraps. To reduce odours, empty your kitchen caddy every 2 to 3 days. Store your kitchen caddy under the sink and keep your curbside bin in the shade between collections. A total of 147,000 tonnes was saved from landfill services in 2024. Find out all the info